So picking up here where we left off last time with slide 619, the data element class. This is a very simple data element class, trivial really. You could of course plug in anything that you wanted to store in that linked list class by redefining the type in the itemType.h. You redefine the type that you want to store in there to be item type. And that's what then gets compiled in with the linked list class. Of course, you have to include the header for the type that you're actually going to be storing in the class. In this case, it's Blues Man type. Okay? So, we've got here for in Bluesman's type.h, we'll include a string. We're going to be using the standard namespace. We've got our pound, if not defined. And then we've got our class. Now, the only thing we're going to be storing in this class is a name, is a string. And we've got a couple constructors, a default constructor and a parameterized constructor. We've got a getName function to return the name that's stored in this object, a setName, an isEqual operator to check to see if it's equal to another Bluesman type object. And we also overload the quality operator so that we can use the quality operator to compare them. So the implementation for these operations here, starting on slide 620, is very straightforward. If the default constructor just sets the name string to nobody, the parameterized constructor just sets the name field to whatever string new name was passed into the parameterized constructor. On the next slide, the getName function just returns the name. The setName function resets the name to whatever string object was passed into it. And for the equality test here, for the isEqual, it just returns back whether or not the name field is equal to the getName in the Bluesman's type that was passed in. And for the that would have then allow us to compare two Bluesman's type objects for equality, shown down here at the bottom of slide 6.22, by doing something like if not musician1.isEqualsMusician2, where we've got these defined as Robert Johnson and Howling Wolf for all of you blues fans. Okay, if you don't know who they are, then you should find out. All right. They are preeminent blues musicians. Okay. That's just an example checking to see if those two are equal and printing out whether or not they're different if they're not equal. This is really checking to see if they're not equal and then it prints them out. And we can do better, of course, since we've overloaded the equality operator here on slide 6.23 shows the equality operator overload, which is trivial in this case, since the only private data member in this class is a string, and strings can be compared by using the equality operator. We can just use it to implement this overloaded equality operator and return back whether name is equal to other.getName. And that then allows us to compare them using a more formal notation that we're used to using by using the equality operator. Would it be okay for us to change that code to be something like if musician one not equal to musician two, would that logically be equivalent No, why not?
Because
we haven't overloaded that operator. That's a different operator. That's the inequality operator and not the equality operator. So if we were going to do that, if we wanted to make statements like that, we would have to overload that operator too. You should be able to overload that operator. That's pretty trivial, right? It's going to look almost identical to this, except instead of equal, it's going to be pound equal. And down in here, it's going to be name, pound equal, other dot get name, right? That's all.
We need to overload the
inequality operator.
The inequality operator?
Not if we always force our user to only use the equality operator and put the negation out in front of it, okay? If we don't want to allow them to ever use the inequality operator directly, then no, we don't have to. If we think so that we might want to allow them to overload it or to use it, or if we're creating this class by ourselves and we want to be able to use it, then we can go ahead and overload it. It's pretty trivial in this case because to overload it would take you about 2 minutes to do some copying and pasting, okay? It'd be pretty easy to overload this one. Now, here, with that being overloaded, we could then, let's say we have a linked list of loose band type objects, and we want to search that list, okay, for some item to see if it's in there. Alright, we've got some other item type is really Bluesman's type for this example, although it really wouldn't matter. You could plug this search function will really work regardless of what underlying item type is stored in the linked list, provided that underlying item type has overloaded the equality operator so that we can compare those two items that are stored in the linked list. But basically all this is going to do is search through it. Now, this function is external to the linked list class. You could include it as a linked list class function member without much trouble, and you should think about doing that and figure out how to do it. It's going to change it around a little bit, but not much. And this condition, this you should be able to answer this down here, the last question, but let's look through this for a moment. We check if the list is empty, we return false because there's no way that this item can be found in an empty list. Otherwise, we'll go to the head of the list. That'll set the current pointer to the head of the list. While there's more lists there. Now list.more list just does what? It checks to see if that current pointer is not null, right? It returns true if it's not null. So if there's more lists and the item that we're looking for is not equal to list.getCurrentData, if it's not equal to the first one that's in the head of the list. If it's not equal to that, then we'll advance the list and we'll keep going. That'll advance it to the second item in the list. It'll check to see if there's still more of the list and it'll just keep going. Then when we're finished here, we'll return list dot more list. Now this returns Boolean. Okay, so it returns true if the item is found. Well, if the item is found, we'll be stopping somewhere in the middle of the list, and there will still be more of the list to process. Otherwise, if we stop because we get to the end of the list and we don't find it, then more lists will basically be returning back false, and that's what we need to return back. Okay? So why isn't that second condition there in the while Boolean expression stated like this? Because we haven't assumed that the item type class overloads the inequality operators. We've only relied upon the assumption, the requirement, that that item type class overloads the equality operator. So be a little bit careful now when you're implementing classes and using your own classes. It's real easy to sort of implement one operator and then all of a sudden you find yourself using a slightly related operator that you haven't overloaded, but the compiler will catch that. It'll complain to you when you try and do that. All right? Now, here on slide 6.25, we're going to look at a slightly different implementation for the prefix node implementation. The original prefix node implementation is on slide 6.11, okay, which, if you recall, here it is, 6.611. Basically what we did was we got us a new node, we checked to make sure that that was allocated okay, and then if the list was empty, we're prefixing it at the head, recall, so if the list is empty, then we would just set the next of the new node to null and set the head, tail, and current equal to this one and then return true. Otherwise, the list would not be empty, so we had to point the next field, the next link of this new node that we've allocated to point to head and head to point to this new node and then return true. Now here's a slightly different implementation. We get a new node and we allocate it to, let me ask you this tonight. Yeah. All right, so here we've declared a new node and we allocate it to the new data that needs to go in there. And then we check if the list is empty, then we go ahead and set the next to null, set head, tail, and current equal to this one, and we return true. Otherwise we do new node dot set next. We set it next pointer to point to the head, and then we set the head to point to the address of this new node, and we return true. So the question here is this implementation superior or inferior to the original implementation?
Superior.
Yeah, superior. Well, I have one vote for superior.
Won't new nodes go out of scope?
Yes, it will. Which doesn't make this a superior implementation, it makes it an inferior. Will the compiler report an error?
No.
Will a runtime error ensue?
Yes,
probably. Yes, maybe. What is this a result of in terms of the memory problem that we have talked about? This is an example of one of those dynamic memory problems that we've talked about. It is an example of what? I hear, let's speak up with some conviction, okay? Mumbling won't get you up in front of the Supreme Court. It might get you on national TV for a debate, but not in front of the Supreme Court. An alias. Yes, for a while. As long as the function is executing, yes. Once the function is no longer executing, the alias problem will go away. But another problem will then suddenly be, the real problem will then suddenly show up.
Memory garbage?
No, not memory garbage. A dangling pointer. It won't be garbage because as soon as this version of prefix node goes out of scope, what will happen to that new node? What function will execute upon that new node?
That new node, the destructor for the new node class, will then execute upon the new node. Now, to be honest with you, I can't really remember whether we even had a destructor for the new node class. Doesn't really matter if we do or not, did or not, because the even if we didn't, the compiler would give us a default constructor. But regardless of whether it does anything or not, the memory for that, which is local to this function, will go away. However, we've now set head in our linked list object to point to this memory location, which has now gone out of scope and gone away. And when we then try later on in our program to do some other operation on this linked list, which requires us to dereference head, we're probably going to run into all kinds of problems. Okay? We may run into undefined memory problems, access violation problems, unexecutable instruction problems, but we will run into problems. Garbage on our output, but we will run into problems. Be careful of this. This is a classic coding mistake to make when you're dealing with dynamic memory. Do not set pointers that have a lifetime beyond the execution of a function to point to variables or data that has a limited lifetime that will go away at the end of the function. All right? This is a classic problem. It's a classic mistake that I see made time and time again. Okay. Well, that completes section 6 in dealing with the linked list class. We're now going to talk about section 7 in the notes, which deals with copying objects. Now, if we do not overload the assignment operator, it turns out that the compiler will automatically provide a default assignment operator for us. For example, given this complex class example here on slide 7.2, we've got two double variables stored in here, a real and an imaginary part. And we've got a couple constructors, and we've got another double modulus member function here. So we initialize A to be 4.3 and 2.9. We would declare and B, we would instantiate B, and then we set B equal to A. Now, if there's no overload of the assignment operator in here, the default assignment operator that the compiler provides will simply do a byte copy. It will copy all of the data members from one object into the other object. And for this case, it's perfectly fine. It'll set the real parts both to 4.3 and the imaginary parts to 2.9, and they will, for all intents and purposes at that point, be equal. Okay? However, if an object contains a pointer to dynamic memory, then if we rely upon the default assignment operator, the same sort of copy takes place, even though most of the time that's probably not what we want. For example, here on slide 7.3, assume that we had the linked list class available to us that we just talked about, and we've got this class integer. Don't ask me why, it doesn't really matter, okay? We've got this class integer. We've got an integer data, we've got an integer constructor here, We type define that to be our item type just to keep things simple here. So we don't have to worry about the objects inside of the linked list class being very complicated. They're trivial. Then if we go down here, we declare an instance of linked list called myList, and we go down into a for loop here from 0 to 5, 0 through 4 really, and we get a new integer and initialize it to the index, and then we append that node. Now the append node, of course, will allocate a new node dynamically. It'll copy this item that we give it into the item for that node. So, you know, we don't have the same problem of dangling pointers here that we had on the last slide for the previous section. Okay? Don't think that we have that problem, because we don't. The append node will be doing the dynamic memory allocation and copying this new integer object over into the node. However, and that would mean then that we would end up with a list formed like this. Here's our linked list, my list. We've got head, current, and tail in there. And we would have five nodes stored in there. Now, these nodes are actually not stored in the object. They're not stored in the linked list object. They're stored actually out in the heap, in the dynamic memory pool. And the only thing that's actually stored in the linked list object are the three pointers to that dynamic memory. Yeah, so if we look on the next slide then, on slide 4, if we declare another linked list, and we set it equal to my list, here's what we end up with. We end up with a copy of my list, and the other list now contains three pointers also, and they point to the exact same locations that the original list points to. This is what's termed a shallow copy, and this can create a lot of problems here. Another list does not, by default, get an entirely separate copy of the dynamic memory. It just gets copies of the pointers. They share the same dynamic memory. However, when we think of setting one element or one item equal to another one, we think of getting a complete sort of separate copy that if we change the original, when we say A equals B, at that point, if we change A, have we changed B? No. In programming, most of the time, when we set two things equal to each other and then we change one of them, we don't think of the other one as also sort of somehow magically changing too. But in this case, after we had done this, if we were to say another list dot destroyed list, I think it's destroyed list, right? If we were to call the destroyed list function, member function, let me check to be sure, I think that's the one. No, no, I don't know. It's not. Well, let's just say we were to say another list dot go to head, and then another list dot delete current node. So we would delete the head node out of another list. The problem would be that the head node. Well, what would be the problem if we did that? That's right. We would, once we did that, these two pointers would get updated so that another list now, the head and current would be pointing to 1. This, the zero, the node containing the 0 would get returned to the heap. But the problem is these two pointers, head and current, in my list would now be dangling. They would now be pointing to a node that's been returned to the heap. So we run into all kinds of problems.
Is this
That's unknown. That would depend upon, now by readable, do you mean can we access it? Yes. Do you mean, does it still have the same contents that it had? Probably not. Okay? It may not, because it will depend upon how the compiler is managing its memory. Alright? Depending upon how its memory, managing its memory, it might not. But regardless, then too, later on, if we call new at some later point in our code, that memory might get reallocated. And so we could run into all kinds of problems then. But it could get reallocated, have different things stored in it, and problems would ensue that would be very difficult to try and track down. So we want to avoid this. And the way to avoid this is to do what's known as a deep copy. We have to be able to get a complete duplicate of the source object. And we're going to have to include code in our class to do this. We're going to have to include code in our class to overload the assignment operator and to go down through the list and allocate a new node for each node that's in the original source object and set and copy the values over so that we end up getting a complete duplicate. Now, here's sort of a first attempt at doing this. We've got operator equals linked list. Now it returns back a reference to a linked list object. Alright? It returns back a reference to a linked list object. Now the overloaded operator, when we say something like A equals B, right? By default, that's sort of equivalent to saying something like A dot equals B, is that right? In terms of syntax or whatever, we're calling the assignment operator upon the A object, passing the B in as the parameter. So in this case, the parameter here, other list, B would correspond to other list. The default object here would be the left-hand side of the assignment operator. Alright? That's the default object. So, when we set head, tail, and cur equal to null, that would be setting the head, tail, and cur of A to be equal to null. We don't copy those pointers. Why? We don't copy them because we don't want to be pointing into the same memory as B. We want to be pointing to different memory that is structured the same way. That contains an identical structure. A separate but identical structure. So then at that point, we would then declare a pointer to a linked node called myCur, right? And we set that equal to otherList.head. That copies the head pointer, and we can do that. We can while we allowed to access the head pointer directly of this object, even though this object's been passed as a parameter. Because it's within our scope, since this is a member function of the linked list class, of which this is a member of itself, or of which this is an object of. Alright? So we're allowed to access those private data members of other lists directly because it's an object of the same class that this operation is a function member of. So we copy over a pointer to the head node, and while that is not equal to null, then we'll declare an instance of the item type and we'll set that transfer data item type equal to mycur arrow get data. So we'll call the list node get data function to return us back the item that's stored in there, and we'll copy it locally in here into transfer data. We will then append node transfer data. Append it where?
To the end of the
default object. Okay, in this case, A. Alright? That would copy it onto A. Then we move my current equal to the next one. We move it to the next one and we do the same thing. That walks down the list. It gets a copy of each of the items that's in each of those nodes one at a time. And then it appends it, which allocates a new node, and appends it onto this new list that we're building up. Now, there are some problems with this implementation. One, what if the target object, what if A, let's say we've got, let me draw you up a little diagram. Let's say we've got list A here, which has a head, a cur, and a tail pointer. And we've got list B here, which has the same three pointers. And list 3 here, list B here, points to this little list. And list A points to now, if I say A equals B, and this is the assignment operator that I'm using. What happens?
The
original list of A is garbage. Because at that point, we just set head, tail, and cur in A equal to null. We lose this memory here. We lose that memory. We lose all of our pointers to it, which means that we can't reach it anymore. We can't deallocate it anymore. It's a hole in our heap. It's garbage. So we have to guard against that. We've got to be careful about doing that because there's also the point of, you know, if we go through here and reclaim this memory before we create the copy, that would be fine. Unless some bozo comes along. What if we include code up here? What if we include code up here that checks, you know, if head is not equal to null, then we include a little loop, while loop to loop, to sort of do like this, to loop down through the A list and basically to delete that current node each time so that it gets returned to the heap. Well, if we do that, that would be okay. That would solve this problem for when A equals B. But what if we come along with one of our not too sharper users of our linked list of our class then says A equals A. What would happen with that?
Well, we go through and delete the list and then be looking in the same place to try and copy information.
They would basically be shooting themselves in the foot. Right? It would destroy their list. Now we know that if these are two integers and we say A equals A, will the compiler complain? No. Will it do anything? No. Will it do any harm? No. So we have to check for this case. There is a special pointer discussed here on slide 7.6 called the this pointer. May not be a great name because that means when you start talking about it, you go in, okay, this pointer, as opposed to that pointer, right? So you're going to have to be aware that we're going to get into some discussions that might sound a little bit strange because of just the terminology. But each member function, by default, has access to a special pointer. You don't have to define it. And its name is this. And it points to the default object that the function member was executed or invoked upon. It points to that object. It's language supplied, it's implicitly defined to be a hidden pointer. You don't need to define it yourself. When you want to refer to itself as a, when an object needs to refer to itself as a whole entity, it'll use the this pointer, not just the individual data members. It's not really part of the object. It's not counted in the size of the object. If you execute the size of on an object, you won't see a count that comes back that includes reserved space for the this pointer. The compiler sort of generates it automatically if you use it in a function member. Otherwise, it doesn't really get generated. You can use it implicitly to access an object's members whenever a member is directly referenced. In other words, when we said on that previous slide, head equals current equals tail equals equals null, we could have said, pretty sure this is right, this arrow head equals null. Doesn't buy us a whole lot, all right? It's really not all that useful in this instance because it's easier to just refer to that data member without going through the this pointer. Okay? But you can do that. You can explicitly use it to indirectly address an object's members. The type of the this pointer depends upon the type of the object to which it refers. The type of the this pointer will be a pointer to the default object. Or in this case, the type for the example that we were just talking about, the type of the this pointer would be a pointer to a linked list object. Right? It would be linked list star would be its type. That would be its type. To be honest with you, though, this pointer cannot be changed. You can't reassign the this pointer in your own code. So it's actually a constant pointer. So it's a constant pointer to X when X represents whatever type of object the data, function contains. In this case, it would be a linked list. It would be a constant pointer to a linked list. If you use it inside of a constant member function, then it's actually a constant pointer to a constant target. All right? So its type depends upon which function it's being used in and which class, and whether it's being used in a constant member function or a non-constant member function. Its type will change a little bit depending upon those. Now, Here's on slide 7.7 is an improved version of the operator overload for the linked list. So first we check if this is not equal to, now this is a pointer, so we can only compare it to another pointer to a similar object or to an address of a similar object. And in this case, we're going to compare it to the address of other lists. So if this is not equal to address of other lists, that's checking. That will be false if someone says A equals A. Because if they say A equals A, then this, wherever A is at, out here, containing these three pointers or whatever, this will be pointing to A. And if we take the address of A, then that will be equal to it. So that will only be true when they're not the same object. That prevents us from accidentally destroying a list when someone tried to assign it to itself. That's all the purpose of that is for it.
In this particular function, is there a reason that the entire function is encapsulated in the if statement or
rather? Yes, there is. Because if, almost the entire function is, right? The reason, because if this is false and someone's trying to do A equals A, then we don't want to do anything else to the list. We don't want to make it empty. We don't want to go down through and try and create a copy. Is that what you're really getting at?
Why not do the normal thing where we say if condition and then a return statement on the same line?
Oh. Well, okay, what would you return then?
The same thing this morning.
Okay. Yeah. That's fine, and that's just personal preference on how you structure your code. In this case, since both of the returns, either this one after this executes or the return even if this is false, if those return exactly the same thing, I just use one return and let it fall through. That's just personal preference. Okay? Now you might notice that I'm returning star this, which is returning what?
The value of whatever this point
is. Yes, which is?
Yeah.
The object. The object that I've just formed, basically. Okay? The object that I've just assigned to a complete copy. I'm returning back a reference. Remember now, this thing expects to get back a reference to a linked list object, not an address, not a pointer. It's getting back a reference, which means I have to return an actual object of this type. So I've got to return star this, which is what it points to, which is the actual object. Now, the rest of this is pretty simple. Then we call make empty. Make empty is what goes down through there and deletes all of the nodes, if you look back in our linked list function. Alternatively, we could call the destructor, which we'll do explicitly. We could call the destructor explicitly. It does the same thing. But then at that point, we know that if we have this case where we have two different lists, and they are different lists, the make empty will go down through and remove all of this and return it, deallocate it, return it to the heap, so that we can safely then go through and reset all of these pointers in here without leaving garbage laying around.
Did you explicitly call it a destructor? Do you have to explicitly call it a destructor after that?
No, because if you look at the contents of the destructor, the destructor does not actually destroy the object. The destructor just executes The destructor just executes. The destructor does not take the object itself out of memory. People get confused with this. They think the word destructor means somehow it's this magical ray gun fires and you take the thing out of memory. No. Right? This object has been passed into us. Okay? This object will not be going out of scope. Calling the destructor on it does not take it out of scope, does not take it out of existence. By calling the destructor on it, all we're doing is executing that destructor's code. The compiler controls whether or not objects go in and out of existence. And in this case, since this object, get that, this object was passed into us, it will still exist after this function is finished executing. Calling the destructor explicitly does not take it out of existence. And if you look at the code that's in the destructor, if I'm not mistaken, it's almost identical to the code that we had in make empty. All right? So it's really just executing the same code. And the rest of this is just what we had before in terms of traversing the B list or the other list and allocating copies of the nodes and appending them to the end.
What's the difference between overloading the assignment operator and a copy constructor?
Yes. What is the difference between overloading the assignment operator and a copy constructor? Well, the difference is that one's the assignment operator and the other one's the copy constructor. The difference is that the assignment operator is really only executed when you assign one object to the other. But the copy constructor gets executed at several other places that we will be talking about. And the copy constructor, kind of like the constructor and the destructor, we know that constructors and destructors get executed automatically, right? They get executed automatically. Well, the copy constructor also gets executed automatically. And we have to know when. And we will get to that. You wanted to answer his question? Here's actually the make empty function that we could add to our linked list function. And all it does is you can see is it goes to the head. While it's not empty, it deletes that current node, which updates the head current and tail pointers to the next one. And then we just keep doing that. And at the end, we set this equal to null, and we return that, and we're done. Okay? Now, by returning a reference to an object, I think I pointed this out to you guys last week when somebody had brought in some code to me for the they had an object array. They had a class for their dynamic array. And in their class for their dynamic array, they had an empty function. And inside of their empty function for that, inside of their empty function, they had something like size equals zero for return. Okay? And they had made a mistake. Right? The mistake was that they used the assignment operator here rather than the equality operator. And this thing actually specifies to zero, even if it wasn't zero, and it returns back that zero, because that's the result of the assignment operator. It returns back what was assigned. Okay? Well, the same thing, the advantage of doing that, and of course the problem is if you use it incorrectly in the language, you run into problems like this. But the advantage of doing that is so that we can say something like x equals a equals b equals zero or whatever, and we can do statements like that. The zero gets assigned to b, since that's what was assigned, that's what gets returned back by that assignment operator, what was assigned, which was zero. And so since that's the result of this assignment, that's what gets assigned by this one, which also returns back to zero, which gets assigned over here. Okay? Well, by returning a reference to this object here in the assignment operator, we can then allow us to, that then allows us to do the same sort of stacked assignment with our objects, and it won't cause any problem. When we say another list equals my list, it then assigns this and it returns back a reference to my list. The assignment operator executes here. This would execute. This would execute. Another list would be the would be what this points to here. Another my list would be associated with other list. This would then execute, and it would return back a reference to this list which was assigned, which would be another list, the value that's assigned. That will then get passed again to this as it gets executed a second time. And the other list, another list, would then get associated with other list, and another copy would be what this points to. And it would execute it again with the correct results. Let me see your notes for just a second, if I may. I think I left a slide up in my office today, the next one. Yes, I did. I hope you have your notes with you. If you don't, slide over to somebody that's got them, okay? Because I'm missing slide 8. I don't have 7.8 with me. Slide over and take a look on somebody's notes. And let me take a look at yours so I can have one to look at. Now, when an object gets passed to a function as an actual parameter in a function call, we've got to be careful about the shallow and deep copy problem comes into play again. If you look at that little example here, we've got a print list taking a my list and an output stream, and all it does here is it's got a temporary item type value, count equals zero. It outputs the list contents. It goes to the head. If the list isn't empty, then if the list is empty, it outputs the list as empty. It returns. Otherwise, if it's not empty, while there's still more of the list to do, it sets the next value to the current data item, and then it goes through and it outputs count plus plus. It outputs, you know, what item number we're at in the list, and then it outputs get name if we're storing the blues man type in there, and then it advances it, and it goes through and it outputs it. Okay? Now, you might notice that the linked list parameter there, my list, isn't passed by constant reference. It's passed by reference, but not by constant reference, which means that we're sort of risking the chance here of modifying the contents of the list. Now, why is constant reference? Why can we not use constant reference there? Why could we not pass my list by constant reference? Anybody got an idea? That's right, because by using advance, when we call my list.advance, that changes inside of that object, that changes the current field, the current pointer. And if we pass this by constant reference, then we wouldn't be able to change the content of that object, which means we could only call constant function members. And we would not be, and since advance is not a constant function member, we couldn't call it. Okay? So in this case, we can't really call that here. Now, we can't call that here on slide 7-9. That's why we cannot call that by constant reference. So, you know, we do get the advantage of passing it by reference. It eliminates the time and extra space to make a copy. But we're opening it up to possible changes that we shouldn't. It's okay to sort of change the current pointer because that can always be reset. We're not actually changing the linked list content. We're just changing the concept of where the current pointer is at. What we would really like to do is we would really prefer to eliminate that chance of an unintended modification. We would like to be able to pass the linked list parameter by a value. To get a if we pass it by value, then what? We have a complete copy. We should have a complete copy. Unfortunately, that will cause us a new problem here. When we pass the object by value, the actual parameter has to get copied into the formal parameter, the local copy inside of the call function. The way that works in object-oriented programming is that there is a special constructor called the copy constructor that does that. Now, if you do not create a copy constructor, the compiler, in a sense, the language, supplies one for you. It supplies one for you just like it supplies a default assignment operator, which means it does a byte copy of the data members that are inside the object. Okay? It does a byte copy on the data members that are inside the object. But that, as we know, is a shallow copy in relation to dynamic memory, in relation to objects that have pointers inside of them. We only get copies of the pointers. We do not, by doing a byte copy, end up with a copy of the entire structure that those pointers point to. That means that the formal parameter would then share data with the actual parameter instead of having its own complete copy. So, if we look at an example of this, here on slide 7-10, here on slide 7-10, we've got print list. If we pass it by value, and we call that from main, we've got some big list here. If we called that from main, we would have this instance here, and when print list would be called, we would have a local variable called myList inside of print list, which would get created, and the data members, the head and actually current and tail, inside of there would get copied into my list so that they point to the same location in memory. Now, the real problem is shown on the next slide, on slide 711. On slide 711, as printlist executes the current pointer in my list, the current pointer in my list would actually get moved, modified, and the nodes would be printed. And that would be fine. Okay? That wouldn't cause a problem. The problem would come when that function goes out of scope. If there is an object that is local to that function, and the function goes out of scope, what happens? The destructor fires. The destructor fires. The destructor would fire up on my list. And the destructor for the linked list, we set the destructor up so that it goes through here and deallocates all of the memory that this list points to. So it would deallocate all of this. So that when we returned back into the code that had called print list, big list would now be pointing at dangling memory, memory that had been returned to the heap. Okay? And that's the problem. And that can get to be very tricky to track down. So the solution is to implement a copy constructor. And we'll talk about that next time.